Welcome to WBOI Presents. I'm Ben Clemmer, producer and host of this program, and it's great to be with you. Earlier this month, WBOI held Issues and Ales at Welch's Ale House. During one half of the event, Indiana Public Broadcasting's Samantha Horton led a panel of experts in a discussion about labor unions. The panelists were Sandra Voss from the Indiana State Teachers Association, Doris Jones from the Service Employees International Union, Kyle Grisham from the Regional Council of Carpenters, and Patrick Hill from the IU Department of Labor Studies. Please enjoy the show.
So I just want to first real quick introduce the panelists, and then we'll go ahead and get started because they're the reason you're here, not necessarily me. First off, I want to thank the panelists Sandra Voss, Kyle Grisham, Patrick Hill, and then Doris Jones, who was a last-minute substitute for us tonight, so appreciation for her flexibility. So at least right now, I know unions are a big topic right now in this country, and so I thought tonight we can really discuss a little bit about where unions are now and what are some of the challenges. But at least to start out, so everyone can kind of introduce themselves and the unions they're with, can we, each of you, if you want to introduce yourselves and talk about the union you're in and what your union does, because unions is a very broad topic and each union serves different purposes. So I'll start with you, Sandra, if you want to.
Okay, I am the president of the Fort Wayne Education Association, which is the teachers union for Fort Wayne Community Schools. And I started that position this June. It's a two-year term to start with. I had been a president of a smaller association years ago, but in Fort Wayne, being the president of the union is a full-time job. So we negotiate the contracts, we deal with HR issues, we meet regularly with administration. It's like a 24/7 position, and I really like it.
I'm Kyle Grisham. I'm a representative with the Indiana-Kentucky-Ohio Regional Council of Carpenters. That's Carpenters Union for short. I'm a member of Local 232 and here in Fort Wayne. I've been a union carpenter for 18 years. I've been a representative going on 3 years this December. And it's really been an incredible honor to represent our 730 members here in Fort Wayne. A lot of the things that we see and deal with here and in my day-to-day happenings have to do with our membership, our contractors, politicians, and legislators. I also talk to young people about career opportunities in the trades.
I am basically with SEIU Local 1, which is Services Employees International Union, Local 1 in Indianapolis. I am on the executive board on basically on the board for over 1,000 workers, janitors, and security officers. I work my full-time job as a janitor, but also as a janitor through a company called SBM, but as a contractor at Eli Lilly. And also, I'm a union worker. So I basically also, not to mention on the elected executive board, member every 3 months, make time working, fighting for workers across Indianapolis, across the board. So it's so worth the fight. I've been in the union for 3 years. A union leader for a year and a half before I stepped up on the executive board for all the workers in Indy. So it's been worth the fight.
And then Patrick, I know you're kind of our academia person tonight, but you've also had your own history of being in a union yourself, so if you want to talk a little about that.
Yeah, I'm a third generation union member. My grandfather was with the United Mine Workers. My father spent 37 years with the UAW, and I spent 10 years with the UAW as well, and now been last 15 years with the Indiana University Department of Labor Studies.
And so I'm going to start with you, Patrick, just a little bit about, I know as we, right now, while we'll talk a little bit more about the modern issues with unions, kind of give a little bit of historical context to unions here in the U.S. I know we could probably spend the whole 50 minutes talking about that and more, but can we highlight maybe some of the key points maybe for people to help understand where we are today then?
The unions have been with us, workers' associations, workers' guilds, whatever you want to call them. Workers gathering together on their own behalf have been with us since, you know, we come over on the boats. You know, they've grown and varied over the course of time. Of course, now we have public sector unionism, such as the teachers and the government workers, and the traditional private sector, and you know, sort of new unionism growing out of different parts of response to the economy. Things like Fight for 15 and Rise the Wage are breeding a new generation of worker activists. And the strikes, which we'll probably be talking about later, are reigniting a lot of passions within the labor movement as a new form of engaging solidarity.
So I know with the transition and unions over the years, there's misconceptions out there. I know we talked a little about that earlier on when we've been talking ahead of this panel. And so I wanted to throw it out to Doris. You can start off, but all of you, I would love for you to chime in about, do you feel like there's misconceptions about unions out there? And maybe highlight one or two that you feel like are misconceptions and kind of inform people about those.
Well, there have been misconceptions. For example, like, oh, the union just takes my money. It's way more than that. Me personally, I've been a union pay dues member ever since day one. Even though struggle and all as a single mom, working two jobs, trying to pay rent and try to not only rent but utilities as well. I didn't care how much I struggled. I was looking at the fact that regarding the dues, it ties into your voice. You get a chance to vote things that, you know, like you have, like for example, you have to ratify a contract. You have to be a dues-paying member in order to vote on a new contract. If it's been ratified, it's been basically okay and won, basically. Won through the fight, basically. So it's process. I mean, that's why it's so important to, you know, pay your dues. It's worth paying your dues. I always tell people it's like car insurance. You need your car insurance, right? So you can drive from one place to another. So it's just that it's the same thing like with the dues paying. You have to, it's like on the job insurance. So it's like you got to cover your bases just in case if just cause or if something happens just in case. So it's like my aunt always say, you got to cover your bases sometimes. And the second one is the whole fact that the workers thinking like, okay, if you rely on one leader, they'll do all the work for you. It doesn't work that way. When it regarding to the union, it's regarding to the workers. It's regarding to their voice, everybody's voice. I always tell people, you got a mouth, use it. If you complain about something in the workplace, use it. If you're not happy with your paycheck, use it. Use your mouth. So, it's always, as my coworker always says, it's a rhyme and a reason. So, continue educating your workers and regarding how important it is to work around the issues that's really important to you and your family, that's what matters. It's just continuing education. That's how important it is.
And Kyle, do you feel like there's any other misconceptions you want to add out?
I would say that one of the biggest misconceptions is that unions are self-serving. Mm-hmm. And the truth is we set the bar for wages and benefits that are for all working people. Mm-hmm. So in the carpentry, in union construction and non-union construction, the wages are set by the bar that we put there. Mm-hmm. Your most instances, the boss is going to pay the worker what they can pay them. So our wages and benefits are as important to us as they are for the non-union people that are out there working. And I would also add that the other thing that many people don't realize is that as representatives for workers, that we are only working for our union members. But we spend a great deal of our time helping other people who are not organized and not working under a collective bargaining agreement, mm-hmm. to have a more equitable deal or something that's a little more fair to what they deserve out there.
And you yourself were not part of a union your first couple years, you said, as a carpenter. Do you feel like some of those misconceptions were changed when you joined a union, or did you feel like you always understood?
I was pretty eager to be a union carpenter. I worked 2 years for a contractor that wasn't signatory here in Fort Wayne, and when I came into the union, I served a full apprenticeship. And the biggest difference for me was there's a level of guidance that I received from the journeyman on the job to show me how our craft works and how we go about things so that we can be safe, productive, and efficient.
And Sandra, for teachers, could you, I guess, talk about, do you feel like there's a misconception with the teachers' union? And I know with Red for Ed Day coming up soon, there's, you know, probably a lot of conversations right now with the Indiana Teachers Union.
Yeah, there are. I think that one of the misconceptions across the board for unions and teachers' unions, too, is that unions somehow protect bad workers, which is just ridiculous, because why would you protect somebody who makes you look bad? I mean, we are associations of professionals making collective decisions, and the idea that we only exist so that we can protect somebody who doesn't want to do his or her job, it doesn't make any sense to me. But I have heard that several times. I also think that when it comes to perceptions of unions, a lot of times people don't really understand kind of what you were saying, how what we do isn't just for union members. Like as a, when we negotiate our contract for teachers, that contract isn't just for our members, that contract is for everybody. So we actually do represent people who aren't dues-paying members for some of the most basic things like their wages and their benefits. And I'm glad that you mentioned on November 19th, it's a Red for Ed Action Day. It is the legislators' Organization Day here in Indiana. And they don't typically pass legislation on Organization Day, but they can. And I don't know if you guys are aware of all the testing our schools do of kids in Indiana. So there's just ridiculous amounts of testing. And there's a test called iLearn. And the state contracts with companies like Pearson or other big companies, and they design a test, and then the test doesn't do well, and they throw it out, and they spend millions of dollars getting another one. Well, last year's test has once again came back with terrible results, and so the state is going to hold schools harmless, which means they're not going to hold those test scores against schools. But they have to pass some legislation in order for schools to be able to evaluate their teachers, because in Indiana, we are micromanaged by our state legislature. And in order for any teacher in the state to get a raise, they have to be evaluated as effective or highly effective on a particular rubric. And if they are not effective or highly effective, they may not get a raise of any kind. But in order to do that evaluation, the state has to pass some legislation so that the school districts can actually give the teachers their evaluation. So we have already bargained. We have a new contract. We bargained raises. We did pretty well this year, but not a single teacher in Fort Wayne has gotten his or her raise, because we have to wait for the legislature to pass a law that will free up the ability for people to get evaluations so people can get raises. So one of the things we're hoping for on Organization Day is for those legislators to pass some legislation so that teachers in Indiana can get their raises for this school year before the holidays. Otherwise, it'll be January or later before teachers will see their raises this year. And education has really taken a beating in like the past probably 10 years. Our collective bargaining rights were greatly stripped about 2010, 2011. And we lost the ability to bargain for anything except wages and benefits. When I used to be a president, we'd bargain for things like class size and curriculum. And in other states and other places, teachers can still bargain for that. But Indiana has been especially unfriendly to teachers, passing all kinds of, besides the testing and the evaluations. Last year, there was actually a proposal that it would be acceptable to shoot teachers with projectiles in active shooter training, because there was a school down by Indiana Beach where they actually contracted with a local sheriff, had active shooter training, and they shot teachers with projectiles, leaving welts and bloody spots. And the association, the union, got involved and said, you can't do that. And one of our state legislators said, well, gee, I think that's probably a good idea, so let's put some legislation that says they can do that. Fortunately, it did not pass, but that's the kind of attitude that we feel a lot in education from our state.
And we'll probably talk more about some of these issues as well, but Patrick, is there anything else that you, with being a labor studies professor, any other misconceptions that have been seen in modern times, too, with unions, as it feels like we are hearing more about strikes coming up around the country in different groups?
Yeah, you know, workers gather together on their own behalf for a variety of different reasons, and it's occurred across time and across the landscapes in the various sectors of our economy for various reasons. I tossed out a word in pre-discussion a while ago called precarity, and all that is really just job security and job insecurity, and how workers feel about that. Workers sometimes get together. They what you hear about is the union dues and this type of stuff. And corruption and problems, and for the most part, unions are there for the workers to have a voice, to come together to raise those issues at the workplace, whether it be scheduling issues in the retail economy, health and safety in manufacturing, the variety of different issues bring. SEIU and a lot of the different unions now are branching out. They represent a lot of different various factions of the workforce. Where a lot of people think is like, they hear UIW and it's strictly the auto workers. Well, auto workers represent, UIW as a union represents 50 different sectors of the economy. It's an interesting point for workers to understand. It's like, how do I gain a voice in the workplace? So there's that mechanism is there for them. And so the misconceptions become the fact of what leaks out in the paper, these corruption scandals, somebody getting caught with their hand in the till. The other thing is all they want is your union dues and you never get anything out of it. Well, we know that what they get out of it, they get better workplaces. They get a voice in the workplace. They get better working conditions, better wages and benefits. A lot of people feel undervalued, and the fact that workers go for a better wage, sometimes causes a point of resentment that union workers are getting that better wage and a set of benefits when the normal economy, if you want to call it that, doesn't promote those sort of things. It's low wages and low benefits versus, the union ideal of higher wages, higher benefits, and a better working place.
And I know for people like general public who maybe aren't part of unions, there's been some recent strikes that have been in the headlines. I'm thinking UAW strike against GM, as well as even Chicago teachers striking there. So I guess the question becomes, is there an uptick in strike? Are we seeing more strikes happening across the country with groups? And I'll throw this to Kyle to start out at least.
Well, I just want to echo what Patrick said there for a moment. I think that in a lot of instances, the public at large is not really looking at the situation in necessarily a correct light, in the fact that there are many people that say, why are you being paid this much? Or you're being paid too much, instead of asking the question, why aren't I making more?
Right.
This idea that's prevalent right now is dangerous. America is the greatest country in the world, and we have working class people that are wondering why that this person has more than the other person. It simply doesn't need to be that way. We need to ask the question, why am I not getting paid what I deserve? But as far as the mechanism of the strike and what you're speaking to on that, I'll say that I feel in a lot of ways that the teachers' struggles that are happening in our country right now, they're the spear point of the labor fight. They are thrust into the limelight in many of these instances, and their issues are made more public than anyone else, and their fight is out there for everyone to see. In these situations, they don't have much recourse other than to band together and do something. And everybody agrees that teachers are important, our children are important, the future of our education is important, but when the rubber hits the road, there isn't much happening unless there are large amounts of people gathering and talking about it. I would say that right now that those are the things that are getting people's notice. When we talk about the misconceptions about unions, one of the biggest misconceptions is the fact that unions are a thing of the past. Many people don't realize that unions are fighting every day for rights that were bought. I don't want to say bought. They weren't bought. They were earned with the blood, sweat, and tears of people in the labor fight. There are basic human rights that we have here in the workplace that are being challenged every day. It's sad that we have to resort to these things.
And Doris, we were talking ahead of time, and you mentioned that you had stood in solidarity with the UAW GM strikes.
Yes.
So can you talk a little about the solidarity with unions? While you all represent different unions, when talking with everyone here, it's been very much clear that there's a lot of respect and a lot of that solidarity feeling between each other. Could you kind of describe that for people?
It was very powerful to stand on the picket lines with the UAW workers. Not only me, but a few of my comrades under SEIU Local 1 stood in solidarity with the UAW workers, making sure, hey, we with you in this fight. We stand with you, because all across the board, it doesn't matter if you a steel worker or basically working on the production line like the UAW workers or a janitor or a security officer, it's all across the board, it's always a struggle. But it's just when you have a bunch of people that is being sick and tired of being taken advantage of by the companies who are not holding the workers as valuable, then a group of people going to say, you know what, that's it. If you're not going to hear us through our contract fight or something, this is our last resort.
And Sandra, I know also part of this too is, you know, comes at times when, you know, is there challenges when there's questions about the leadership? I'm thinking like there's, you know, there's legal questions with the leadership or there's any trouble with the leadership of unions. Has there been concern from, I mean, with ISTA ever, you know, does that impact membership? Is there concerns that there, if there's that problem up on the top, that it hurts the rest of the union?
I think that it would. Since I've been involved, there hasn't been, but I think that would be true any place. I do want to just kind of go back and piggyback on a couple of things here, because how sad is it that somebody can work 40-plus hours full-time and still be poverty level in this country? That, you know, how sad is that? And every single time that we have some sort of event, whether we're having a graded on the courthouse or someplace else, we get people from other associations who come out and stand with us. And so that's just what I was thinking when you guys were talking, is that you guys always come out and support us. We try to go out and support you. And it really is like we are all in this together. Mm-hmm. And I am going to piggyback then once again back to the 19th, because the last time that we checked, there were 11,800 and some people registered to attend the rally in Indianapolis on the 19th, which is a Tuesday. And that is the largest demonstration that probably will ever historically have happened in the state of Indiana. If imagine 11,000 people in downtown Indy, and that number just keeps going up. So when I'm typing to people saying how many people are there, I have to keep going back and changing it because it just keeps upticking. And so I think that shows that really the moment is now too, that people are paying attention. I think that, back to your question, if there is some sort of corruption or a scandal in any leadership, if it's a union, if it's a business, if it's anything else, I think it's always going to have a negative impact. But I don't think that unions are any different than anything else in that circumstance.
And then Patrick, I know we talked a little about too, because we're going to shift this a little bit to challenges before we let the audience start asking some questions too, but challenges going forward into the future with unions. I know we talked a little about the gig economy. Could we talk a little about, you know, some of these challenges that unions face, you know, with or even right to work states going forward in the future in the U.S.?
Certainly. Again, just to piggyback a little bit and answer your thing, statistically, major strikes are going up, and the teachers, I'm not even going to call them strikes, I'm going to call them revolts around the United States. Virginia, deep red states like Arizona, where they're going out. Two, just this morning, we were talking about beforehand, Louisiana, you know, basically banned any action by their teachers there. They're going out on strike anyway. Durham, Massachusetts, same there. It's illegal for teachers to strike. They went out anyway. And people think of strikes as a violent action. It is a reaction to the way that they've been treated. The GM strike, and so for a lot of those folks, because for the seniority workers, nobody didn't expect to get a large payout from the GM contract. But the underlying thing was this notion towards the gig economy, towards temporary workers, which has been an ongoing issue. The same thing she described, where they get little to no health care, no pensions. You know, in the retail sectors, the people working, having to work scattered shifts, and they're trying to hold two or three jobs down. I flew with the janitor to New York one time, and he was telling me the stories. He had to work three jobs, and he was crying because he had to go home to his mom's funeral. He didn't know how to make up that money. That's a sad state of America. You know, we workers need to be empowered. And the legislature is trying their best. As we were talking about before, on the 19th, we're hearing that certain legislatures are calling their districts and trying to say you can't use school buses. You need to call off your e-learning days to try to put pressure to bring the teachers back and not have them down there at the state house. And together, when they stand together, are a powerful, powerful voice. Walking together with the UAW, the janitor strike, teachers, you know, all these different things. Show people that there's power in the workforce. There's power within our voice to gather together and make the bosses reply. And they're going to fire back and make things legal. You know, one of these days they're going to be like a national right to work, which is just basically a right to work is a crippling effect for the union. It provides no jobs. It provides no guarantees of benefits. It provides nothing other than the fact that it's an effort to just basically financially bankrupt the union. And, you know, take away that voice. They think if they can cripple us financially that we're going to stop. It's never happened in history, and we're not going to stop now. And people need to understand that. They've gone after my department several times from the state level. Have a former professor here, Mark Crouch, out in the crowd, who could testify to that. You know, because they don't want people knowing that they have rights, that they have the ability to gather together. that they have, they can use the law to their own advantage versus the employer just using it to batter us down.
I do want to throw us down the line really fast, just if you guys want to, just each of you, Doris, Kyle, and Sandra, just kind of talk about the challenges you see with unions going into the future here, with, you know, maybe whether it's the right to work laws or whatever you see as some of the biggest obstacles unions have to overcome in the upcoming decade or so.
Specifically regarding the challenges that we face, I think that two of the biggest ones are the idea is the apathy, that people thinking that nothing's going to change, that there's nothing that we can do. But the fact is that it only takes one point to win a game, one vote to win a race, one person to really change what's going on. And I think that that's something that people are starting to gain sight of. But it's a huge challenge, that apathy that's there. And along with that, you know, with the teachers are funded by state taxes, aren't you? In the construction industry specifically, there's an epidemic of tax fraud from illegal business models with construction companies. In 2010, they did a study that shows that there are hundreds of millions of dollars lost in federal, state, and local taxes, people not paying their fair share. There are solutions here. We're working on solutions together. What it takes is people to realize that the real danger is accepting what's going on. And don't even get me started on the gig economy.
And if anyone wants to go ahead and start lining up, so once Sandra finishes, then we can start having questions. But Sandra, I'll let Sandra finish, and then if next we can start to do questions.
I'd say I actually am pretty hopeful and very enthusiastic right now because of the swell, the way the support for public education has exploded. Just the number of people that have signed up for going down Indianapolis on the 19th, the number of school systems that have been forced to close, over 100 systems have been forced to close for that day because there won't have any teachers there because they're all going to Indy. And I've heard from parents, I've heard from subs, I've heard from assistants. I have not heard one person say anything negative. All I've heard is encouragement. So I think the time is right. We've hit a tipping point, and I really think that we're on the right path now.
Awesome. And so we can, anyone, any audience members have questions, the mic's right here if you want to ask any of our panelists.
I walked all the way up here not to say very much, but Mr. Hill, you referred several times to they as a pronoun about what's holding back unions and wages, and you said they many times, and Sandra, you talked about the people who evidently are legislating against improving education and wages, and so I want to know, who are those people?
I'll start because I can do it really quickly.
Okay.
We have a supermajority right now in the Indiana state government and our senators and our representatives. And there has been a lot of national, something called ALEC, writes legislation that they give to the states, and then individuals in the states will put that legislation forward. And it is anti-public school legislation. And I can't say that it's just, I'm not going to say it's just Republicans, because honestly, we had union rights in Indiana because of Otis Bowen, a Republican governor. So it's not always a partisan issue. Lately, it has been a partisan issue because it has been the supermajority of Republicans that have been pushing the anti-public school legislation, which isn't even necessarily written in Indiana.
I would agree it isn't a partisan issue because there's the Democrats for Education Reform that exist out there that push these same type of issues. When I refer to they, sometimes we refer to things in broad strokes in terms of business and politics and things like that, which is sort of dangerous to do because not every business is anti-worker. Some businesses treat the workers extremely well, and they will probably never organize because those workers have a voice. They make a good wage. They get benefits. You know, pensions, things like that. I was thinking about what she was saying earlier. It's like, you know, in terms of this gig economy thing, so-called gig economy, you have those folks out there, the temporary issues, the contract worker issues of these people. Not only are they being paid less, but they're not getting the benefits. And a lot of times that leads to aggravation is, you know, we at one time in my school district where I serve on the school board, our teachers paid a dollar copay. And it created a lot of resentment within the community because most people can understand, probably sitting here in the audience, we pay typically 40% of our copays or more. And the question that Kyle asked is, why are we not asking the question, why shouldn't we be paying a dollar versus why are they just getting to pay a dollar? You know, understanding that there's a sense of value and a sense of worth, and a greater man than I said, there's dignity in all labor. You know, that comes across in multiple different ways and how people are treated. It's not always, I've found unionized shops that are extremely happy. They're making barely above the minimum wage. But they have a voice in that workplace. They have the solidarity that goes along with it. And they have, you know, the feeling that they can get through life and not have to contend with those issues of not worrying about what happens because I can't retire because I have no pension. Or that I can't get sick and come to work, right? That you can take a day off, and especially in the public sector, in your cases, like with janitors and maids and food service workers and things like that, that just spreads those colds and germs all over the place. Like I said, we kind of paint in broad strokes sometimes, because not every corporation is evil, and not every legislator is evil, depending on their party. But you know, it's definitely it's been a mounted attack and very, very proficient in destroying some of the rights in different sectors of our society.
I wanted to jump in and piggyback what you said about legislators are not evil. Not all legislators are evil. There's a huge support of workers from the political aspect. Basically, when the almost 100 volunteers got volunteered, two of the city county councilmen volunteered and put their bodies on the line to get arrested as well. And then not to mention the city county councilmen, the mayor himself, it just took the workers' stories for them to move and to want to stand behind the workers.
Can I mention my pet peeve, right to work? I cannot stand the name of the legislation called Right to Work when it really means like right to work for people who will exploit you. They need to like continue the sentence because who wouldn't be for the right to work? And there's a lot of little misleading names of things that if you dig in and see what they actually stand for, that on the surface it's like, oh, that sounds like it'd be great. But when you dig in, it's not so great at all.
Did you feel that any of your unions were impacted when the right to work came into law here in Indiana? Did you feel like membership has struggled since that legislation passed?
I'm proud to say that our membership has not struggled. All of our members pay their dues, and I'm happy to say that. I will say that there's been other legislation, the repeal of common construction wage, that has been more hurtful to us than anything else, and that those were the laws that said that there's going to be a wage setting on public works projects for our schools and our bridges and our other public works projects. That was repealed in the idea that they were going to save money. There hasn't been any more money saved. There hasn't been any more money saved, and those projects haven't gone as efficiently or productively or as safely as they could have. And as a result of that, wages have stagnated because of that.
To add, I do have to say, basically, for of course, with SEIU representing service workers like the janitors and the security officers, it was before the right to work basically law passed, which I totally agree with you, Sandra. It's ridiculous how it was passed. And you know, when it came to, it was at first, before it was passed, it was, the membership was huge. It was a lot of janitors, a great amount of janitors in the membership, and basically the security officers as well. But after it basically passed, it's been a struggle. But we still keep that verbatim going. We keep that fight going and continue to educate. It's like I said, education, knowledge is power. If you keep on educating your workers, especially in my case, you know, we had to educate the workers and they had to understand that right to work isn't like, because mainly what they think about is, oh, I get the benefits. I could get the benefits without paying the dues. And to be honest, that's the reason why we, you know, saying that it's very important to pay dues. And so, but ever since then, it's basically rebuilding. It's continuing to rebuild. So it's kind of like starting all over again, but it's still growing.
We have only a few more minutes, so I just want to make sure, give a chance to panelists to have a last, like, kind of few thoughts, comments. I see, Patrick, you're ready to make a comment, so go for it.
Well, statistically, we didn't lose because the groups like the construction trades, the major industrial unions, the UAW, the steel workers, went out and educated not only their membership about what it meant to pay dues and you know, what the effect was, which we didn't really get to cover, you know, in terms of the ripple out of safety and wages and things like that, but they educated their community as well. And that led to a lot of things. I think, you know, the solidarity that we saw in the UAW GM strike, the janitor strike, the teacher strikes, because I have a feeling that when we go down there on the 19th, there's going to be a whole lot more than just teachers and administrators there. I think there's going to be a lot of people from the labor movement that are going to be on that lawn with us. It's engaging and heartwarming in some ways. It makes me feel very hopeful that things like, as I mentioned before, things like Fight for 15, Rise the Wage, the work and the good, almost historic, like she said, contracts that are happening in retail and the private sector economy are engaging people in a way that's not been seen for quite a while.
I think it ties into, I know we talked a little bit about, like, now unions almost kind of have to think outside the sandbox, I think was a word that was thrown out when we had talked prior to being up here on the stage. But I guess then, Sandra, going forward, I guess, is there anything else that you want to add to tonight's conversation? I know it's probably a lot. We could spend the next 50 minutes and more, but any last thoughts?
I think that I am cautiously optimistic for the future of unions because I do think things are cyclical. And I believe that as more and more people are educated and realize that unions aren't protecting bad workers, we just offer due process so everyone is treated fairly, how that with union work you have a guarantee of quality, and that when unions do things like set wages, it helps everybody, even those not in the unions. And I think the more people really are becoming aware in this kind of support that we see as is evidence for the support of the 19th, I really think that that labor is making a comeback and labor creates all wealth. And I think we have been sticking together and I think it's working.
I have to say that I met Sandra for the first time when they were demonstrating outside of the courthouse here in Fort Wayne, Indiana. I was on my way to city council and we saw them out there wearing red and standing up for what they believe in. And that moment that we stopped and we talked about things that we have in common and things that we can work together on, That simple thing is really the key to a lot of our, I think that that's the key that's going to unlock a lot of our problems. So thanks for having me.
I want to thank Patrick, Doris, Kyle, and Sandra all for coming up here tonight. If we can give them a round of applause. Great.
This has been an episode of WBOI Presents. Special thanks to Indiana Public Broadcasting Samantha Horton and panelists Sandra Voss, Doris Jones, Kyle Grisham, and Patrick Hill for taking part in this conversation in our community. You can find other Issues and Ales conversations online at WBOI.org or wherever podcasts are found. Just look for WBOI Presents. Thank you to Lucas Norton for running sound at Welch's Ale House. Our music is by Mark Waldick and Noah Campodonico. Our web producer is Loyal Vandenberg. Our WBOI intern is Brittany Smith. Until next time, thank you for listening.